Welcome to the ColorCast. We are the Coloristos. I'm Josh Pitok, coming to you from LA.
I'm Jason Myris, coming to you from LA.
And I'm Juan Salvo in New York City. And today, we're doing a special podcast about, well, what's happened today, I think, is the release of Resolve 9. So a pretty exciting day for all Resolve users. I think this is like a really highly anticipated release just came out. I hope I'm not revealing too much of a secret here, but I've been on the beta for a little while using Resolve 9 on and off in various projects. And so we thought it would be a great opportunity, kind of as everybody's sort of starting out, you know, downloading the brand new release, maybe we could talk a little bit about the headline features and kind of discuss our experiences with it or my experiences with it. And I think Josh and Jason both have probably a lot of questions for me.
Absolutely. I know, we're both so excited, Jason. Ready to jump down Juan's throat.
Yeah. I mean, how about this? What do we all agree is the biggest single change? I mean, is it the interface? Is it the audio support? You know, what do you guys think is going to be the largest notable feature of this release?
Well, I mean, certainly the interface has been drastically, drastically changed. So, I mean, I think you guys both saw it at NAB, right?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's what you're seeing in the final release is pretty much in line with what we saw at NAB, which is just drastic simplification of the interface. You know, it's much, much easier to get started now. And I think that's really an effort to just, you know, one of the biggest things you see on the forums is in terms of new people using Resolve is, you know, how do I get started? How do I get a project set up? All of that has been really streamlined. It's much, much easier. It's very much a no-brainer. So I think people are going to have a much easier time getting into Resolve nowadays.
Juan, are you finding that the idea of just drop your footage in and go is sort of happening? A lot of people were feeling that the original process of getting a project online required, you know, several steps, and now apparently you can just get going very quickly with a few clicks.
So I think what people will find, you know, once they download the new version and get started with it is basically you're going to have your login screen, you know, even the setting up the actual system itself. You no longer need to use a Postgres server like you had to in previous versions. You can now use just basically a file system project structure. So it makes it a lot easier, especially for light users downloading the app for the first time. You'll be able to download the app, set up your user, and then be basically into a project without having to go through complicated project setups. You know, the project setting windows has been moved. It's no longer sort of the default window that you end up in. That's a really intimidating window, I think, for a lot of users. I don't know if when you guys used Resolve for the first time and you saw that project setup window, I found it sort of comforting, but I think a lot of users found it very intimidating.
If you're in a bigger facility, you can still use a database. It's not completely gone.
Absolutely. Gotcha. No, the database works, and it works just perfectly. There's no issues. In fact, if you're upgrading from an existing 8.2 installation or whatever, you'll get a prompt to upgrade your database structure for the new version. So databases work just fine. But if you're a light user and you're using a standalone system, you don't have to use a database. Or rather, it technically is still a database, but it's a file system-based database as opposed to a server client-based database.
Yeah, one of the things that I really jumped at NAB was the log rating tools that they have built into Resolve 9 as well. I mean, it's definitely a fundamentally different way to grade something. So it was like that to me was a really big difference. And one, as far as I could tell, there was four color wheels as well. So have you used those? What do you think of those?
Yeah, the log tools are really powerful. I'm a little concerned about what we haven't seen yet in terms of how is it going to integrate with the third-party panels. Certainly, they're going to really focus on the Resolve panels for like hardware integration with those things. So a lot of the log tools, I think, because there's so many functions, there's the contrast function, the pivot functions, there's low, mid, high, highlight controls. It doesn't necessarily map out on the third-party panels. It won't have enough buttons or enough space. So I think there's going to be a little more GUI usage for that particular tool. It's a really, really powerful tool. I think it's a different way of approaching a grade. And in that sense, it's going to be a mind change for a lot of
yeah.
people.
Using the thing that kind of blew my mind too, a really minor thing, was like, hey, what happened to my up and down arrows? And it was
so
like, what? It's gone.
They did add back the ability to switch to Resolve 8 keyboard configuration. So you can switch keyboard configurations now. Yeah, I find that a lot of the new keyboard shortcuts are very intuitive. You know, one of the things that people I read in the forums, in various forums, that people complaining about was just like the fact that you couldn't just hit the up arrow or the down arrow twice to switch it on and off. You had to switch between up and down to turn it on or off. And so now the new command for that is option D. So option D disables all of your nodes or enables all of your nodes. But it's a toggle, so the same keyboard shortcuts go both ways in that case.
Is there an extensive overhaul of the new key commands, or is it just a few things based on, say, customer feedback?
No, that was my kind of biggest, in the beta, that's been my biggest hurdle, has been getting used to the new keyboard commands, because there's a lot of changes, especially for people who heavily use the keyboards before. You know, a lot of people using the full panels probably don't use the keyboards that much because you have a button for basically every function. But if you're using some of the third-party panels, you're probably using the keyboards quite a bit, and they've had significant changes to the keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah, wow. Did they actually add in MEMS past H?
I don't know. I always use the I always end up using the GUIs for the MEMS, so I haven't had an opportunity to jump on that for the keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah, I always thought that was really funny. It was like, what happened to the rest of the alphabet?
Exactly. Well, speaking of that, I mean, is the grade management really improved? Because that was a big thing people wanted to be able to start, even on the Lift Gamma Gain. You know, people were starting to wonder about how they could start collecting up looks and getting those organized.
Yeah. So there's been some, I mean, across the board organizational changes. I think that's been part of the GUI revamp. So there's pages that can be renamed within the gallery. You're able to easily name your grades. There's a whole gallery page now to kind of organize things, like for your power grades or power looks. It comes with some fairly nice built-in looks. So now you're able to kind of apply those and modify them, tweak them, and save them as power grades, your own power grades. You know, down the line, there's additional organizational features, like on the sequence now you're able to put pins and markers so you can kind of refer back to things. You're able to use those pins and markers to kind of organize things when you're in the render room, which is now the delivery room. So if you're in the delivery room, for example, let's say you're doing a round trip workflow. Josh, I'm sure you do this from time to time.
Yes.
And you have to go back and tweak a couple of shots. For whatever reason, you realize the grade was a little off or shot changed or something. It used to be you had to kind of manually track which shots were you changing and then re-render those. Now you can put a marker on them, and then in the delivery room you can just look at the shots that have markers on them and only render the shots with markers. So that's a big time saver and a nice organizational feature. You can name nodes now, which is huge.
Yeah.
I find that enormous. So now you can kind of keep track of exactly what you were doing with the nodes. It's really nice and it's really powerful, especially if you're using power grades where you've kind of got looks that you've developed, but you don't always remember, like, was node 1 the primary grade, or did I do something else in node 2, or what was going on in node 3, and you kind of have to look in the node to figure out what it is. Now you can just name the node and kind of keep track of what's going on with each node.
Yeah, another thing that I really noticed at NAB was the streamlined tracking interface, too, and being able to just select a range you can just delete the bad keyframes on. I still think they need to go a kind of long way in just keyframing in general. Maybe we'll see something like that in V10. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely going in the right direction. You can see that, hey, they understand that was a little bit cumbersome to deal with, and they're making it better.
In terms of what Resolve has gone through in the past couple of years, it's kind of remarkable. I think originally they were trying to make the move from being, you know, a large, expensive, you know, big iron system. And now it feels like they've got a lot of the underlying market change under control. In fact, they're, you know, very successful, you could say. And now they're really starting to move the software along into a new direction. So it's almost like, you know, I guess some people could call it Renaissance version 2 for Resolve.
Yeah.
With the original one being the market change and now off to the races with new ideas.
I will say that the focus on this release, one is addressing issues that people have had from version 7, which was the first sort of Blackmagic release. You know, it's the first time they're really heavily adding new features, new functionality. It's the first really Blackmagic release of Resolve. I think the focus beyond that has been Daily's workflow and just workflow functionality. The audio support is a big part of that. There's great audio syncing functionality that just automatically lets you sync, batch sync whole folders of clips to the third-party sound. Obviously the native camera support is really, really great. So you still have Phantom, you still have Red, you still have F65. Asus works really well in Resolve 9. So they put a lot of work into adding Asus support, native Asus support for like the Canon DSLRs, for the Alexas, for the Canon Log C-Log, for the F65, for the Red cameras. All that stuff is just really, really powerful and makes it a real Daily's workhorse.
Do you feel like it's going to really dominate that space now that it supports audio? Is it something that is fast enough and easy enough for all the new users that will touch it?
Oh yeah. So one of the things they definitely put a lot of effort into is also, which I've never had this complaint that Resolve was slow to render, but they've actually sped up the render engine. So now going into like ProRes files, it's even faster. Not that it was ever slow before. So, I think they're definitely going to find the wind at their back on the Daily's front. I think for a DIT station, for even just an in-house like tight turnaround Daily's environment, I think it's a really, really good choice.
So what do you attribute that speed improvement to? Do you think that they're making better use of the GPUs or the CPUs?
I think we'd have to get Rohit on here to like get a real answer. I don't know. I think it may be optimization. I mean, they definitely are focusing in on making it as fast and efficient a system as possible. It's really, really a primary focus for them, and they've done a great job. You know, it's amazing. Like you use ARRI RAW or you use F65 RAW footage versus using Red RAW, you'll see a night and day performance difference unless you have a Rocket card. Because of the open SDKs from those cameras that allow debayering on the GPU instead of the CPU, whereas Red only supports CPU debayering. And so they're getting performance from their GPU-based debayering out of those RAW formats that Red could only dream of from the Rocket.
That's interesting, because you kind of think of like, that's the Red tax, right? Okay, you have to buy a Red Rocket in order to work with Red files in post. But I mean, if you think about it, now that you have these cards that are so beefy that are $300, it's kind of difficult to kick down $5,000 for a card that seems pretty old now.
Yeah, what it says to me is like if Red wasn't invested in selling the Red Rocket cards and they opened it up to GPU support, they could actually be getting performance that exceeds what they're getting from their Red Rocket cards out of consumer GPU devices.
Right. They'd just be shooting themselves in the foot, though. That's the only problem.
Would they? Because is the Red Rocket card a major... It's kind of a flaky card, and they don't have a very good warranty for it, so maybe it is a major profit center for them, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
But, wouldn't they be better off selling a lot more cameras and having a more robust workflow?
From a business standpoint, I think that they would be well-served by just getting people cameras that they're really happy with, that they are just shooting with, right, and they're making more footage with. I don't think that, charging that much for the card is worth it to them from a business standpoint, but that's probably a different podcast altogether.
Jason, we want to jump into that.
One of the things that's interesting is I went and I invested in a Red Rocket, and it's helped a lot. I mean, one of the big things is that, over the last, let's say, month that I've had it, I've used it about 8 times, and it's a dramatic improvement. And totally, it is an old card. That was the scary thing about purchasing it. But I really, even though I bought a Red Rocket, I did that as a way to invest in the Red market. But I believe that, Red would be benefited by moving on. Totally. I mean, I would love to see that. And I really think if I were going to ask for something, I think the Alexa model is really nice. Offer DNX or ProRes for very fast creation of dailies or even a very high quality intermediate format, but then, have the RAW there. And it just seems like, Jim Jannard, I think, has spoken very much like against any kind of intermediate formats coming out of his camera.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand because the red codec is actually a really efficient codec. You know, it's not a terribly wasteful in terms of space. You know, you want to talk about like huge file sizes? Look at what the F65
produces. Right. Yeah.
Or even like ARRI RAW they're tremendous files. So it's a really efficient codec. It's not a codec issue as much as it is a performance issue. But you know, if you're heavily invested in red workflow, or you want to do a lot of red work, the red rocket card pays for itself, you know, on the first job. You
that
know,
is in terms true.
Of improved totally. Efficiency. Yeah. The only problem is, you know, and it's sort of a philosophical one in that they could be doing the same thing as has been proven in these other cameras. They could be doing the same thing on the GPU that they're doing on their proprietary processing card for a significantly lower cost and at a much broader base.
So speaking about camera support, you know, what are some of the cameras, especially RAW formats, that you've been able to try in Resolve 9 and how have they been working out?
Yes, how does the iPhone look in it?
Actually, I've been using some Canon stuff. I don't know if they made any changes, but the 264 decoding seems to look a little better. That could just be subjective on my part. I didn't really AB it with version 8. I've been using it with F65. I've been using it with ARRI RAW. I've been using it with all kinds of QuickTime files, obviously, like ProRes and whatever else. One really nice thing, if you guys use the HyperDeck Shuttle at all, is that they're adding support for DNxHD and a QuickTime container now. So that's both in import and export.
Yeah, that was a real pain because if somebody just sent you a QuickTime that was in DNx, it wouldn't work. You'd have to bring it in and
convert it to MXF.
Exactly, then, that was a real pain.
Yep. So now you're able to just work with that natively, which is just a real help. And you know that kind of brings in. I think you'll find that the BDM-CC, the Blackmagic Cinema Camera, is going to support the same kind of workflow. So it's also going to use Qt containers for the DNx HD format. And so it's going to be kind of nice for kind of a quick turnaround dailies thing going into Avid. You know, you'll be able to open up that Qt DNx HD file, do your dailies grade on it, and then export out an Avid DNx HD file that can go right into editing.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that that's the Trojan horse in this whole situation. It's like, this is the release that gets DaVinci into the dailies world. I mean, really, with the audio support and all of that, it really makes a lot of sense. It just is a question of how does it work in the real world?
Yeah, I think people can find the speed, the functionality is there. The stability has actually been really good in the beta. You know, I've had a few bugs that I've run into, but they've been cleared out pretty quickly. Some of them were just user error things that now there's prompts. Yeah. You know, I think it's got a really golden opportunity to kind of make a giant leap in the dailies workflow and then have that lead up through the entire post-production workflow too.
What do you think was missing from this release? Like if there was one or two things that you really hoped would be in this release that aren't there, what would those be?
Well, let's talk about one feature that I think came into the beta. It was not announced at NAB, came into the beta kind of late, and I think is something that maybe people aren't aware is in the release version, which is you'll be able to take your mixed frame rate Avid sequence or your mixed frame rate Final Cut sequence, bring it in through the regular AAF or XML workflow, have those files show up, and then render those back out in the round trip workflow in their original frame rate. So you're not going to have to change frame rates or burn in frame rate changes in order to be able to deal with things in Resolve.
That's it. That's great. That's really good. I'm actually curious too, because sometimes I'll get projects that have mixed drop frame and non-drop frame in there too. And I know I've seen that on the forums a million and one times when somebody's trying to do a conform. So I'm really hopeful that that's going to fix that change as well.
The one big thing that'll be wonderful is just anything that Resolve can do to make the conform process easier, you know, where there's less prepping is going to be huge because so much time is spent sometimes on getting things very perfect so that when they go into Resolve, you know, you have a smooth import of your project.
So I think let's talk a little bit about just what you're going to see once you download Resolve 9. You know, once you install it, you'll set up your user, you'll open up that user, and then you'll basically be in the media environment. You'll be able to pull in media raw media from your camera or already edited media if you want. Or you'll be able to just go into the file menu and go import XML AAF from your editorial and conform right away. You're no longer going to have to worry about bringing, creating devices for your the folders where your media is stored, because all of the devices on your system will automatically get added as available devices in Resolve.
Oh, right. So it doesn't look like it's under volumes and some other Unix-y kind of style of...
You still have the ability to set that up, so you can still set up fixed repositories.
Right.
But you'll also just be able to just use basically an auto-mount function, which will automatically mount. Even if you bring in a FireWire drive or some external media, you won't have to restart Resolve anymore in order to make that media available.
Right.
So that's a big... just workflow change, and that's just one less thing that people are going to have to worry about or get their heads around as they're starting out in Resolve. It just makes the point of entry in Resolve much easier.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes it feel like a more modern piece of software in general.
And one of the things I was just going to say is that's going to be critical for the DIT world. I mean, people, if they want to, you know, use this for DIT work, rebooting every single time they add a card or whatever, it's just not going to fly. And so by adding that, they've really have made it a DIT capable product, you know?
Absolutely. So you could envision a DIT workflow for this where, for example, they just mount the Red Mag or whatever on their system. They access the native files. They do a rough grader. They apply their LUT onto it and then make the dailies and export the dailies while they're still copying the raw media to their backup volume.
Yeah.
It's just a very, very quick workflow.
Speaking of some features that people find kind of exciting right now, you know, you said that there's very good ACES support. So one of the interesting comments that I hear a lot is some people think ACES is still heavily a work in progress. Other people are saying that they've found an island in which to sit and get a lot done with it. You know, how was ACES in Resolve for you?
If you're, you know, as a sort of island mentality, you know, if you're working ACES just within your sequence, it works really, really well. I'm looking forward to seeing it get adopted more with like the VFX workflow and the kind of the sort of full DI environment workflow where every step of the line can be ACES and everybody can just work in ACES and share the same media and share the same working space. So, I mean, that obviously requires third-party support, but internally within Resolve, ACES is working really, really well.
So, when I was at NAB as well, there was the option to do multiple render outputs.
Yes, that's in the final release. So you're going to see the ability to just add output modules, and you'll be able to, there's a lot of expanded codec support now. So you'll be able to, for example, put render out stuff into a DNX HD format on any Qt container, for example. So you'll be able to do a lot of that stuff. There's also, you know, there's some Red support, and then you can like truncate Red files to just get rid of stuff that isn't in your final conform sequence, which will be nice for sort of backing up Red stuff as well.
And when you're rendering, they're actually rendering simultaneously as well.
Right. So there's some efficiency in the render. So the Qt renders will still work consecutively. But like, for example, if you're doing file renders, so if you're doing like a DPX sequence and a TIFF sequence of XYZ or whatever, you'll be able to render those frames concurrently. So it'll basically just process the frame once and then deliver to multiple outputs.
Is there something with the GPUs that you have that will speed that up? So is there a possibility that people could be making monster render stations? Is that something that's a reality?
I don't know, the price is so low on Resolve that, you know, it works so well in a shared environment. You know, if you have a SAN and you have a shared database, you can very, very easily have a dedicated render station. So it's especially if you're doing something like dailies, you know, if you have a large facility that has a couple of Resolve systems and you're using a machine for dailies, you know, it's a pretty much no-brainer to make a beefy machine just for processing out your files and just, you know, basically just open up that project and render out, you know, a whole slew of files from one machine and just let it go.
Yeah.
Well, right. You know what would be awesome in this too is, and it started to actually come around a lot, is it would be great if you could make DCPs right out of Resolve. I know you can kind of do that with XYZ color space, but it would be cool if it was all automated right in that application.
Well, there are some really nice. I mean, that's a whole nother. DCP is a whole podcast on its own. But yeah, there is. You know, you can make the XYZ TIFF sequences right out of there, and that gets you about 90% of the way towards a DCP. The remaining part is pretty no-brainer kind of workflow stuff.
Cool.
So it gets you close.
Is there anything else that you noticed in the beta that we're missing?
One other feature you guys may not, that was not a headline feature at NAB that has been added in that may be a surprise to some people, is they've actually revamped the scopes in Resolve to kind of fall in line with sort of the new sexy GUI. They have some new sexy scopes, which I think a lot of people are going to be really happy about.
This is an amazing release. This is huge compared to Resolve 8. So I'm really excited. I can't wait to start playing with it.
Yeah, there's a lot to dig into. So I think we're going to be talking about this some more down the line once people get a chance to get their teeth into it and really kind of take it for a ride around the block. But I think people are going to be really impressed with this release. I think it's going to be tremendous in terms of a lot more adoption. You know, people are going to find it a lot easier to get into Resolve, and we'll see whether or not that ends up being a good thing or a bad thing for us as colorists.
One of the big things too is that a nice occurrence is that the DIT world is finally seemingly getting a bit settled. There's a lot of mature products out there. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, it was kind of the Wild West, you know, it was laptops and hard drives. And then, you know, people understand now that you really want to, instead of film, you have this new file format, and that needs to be taken care of. And people are investing the right amount of equipment and time and energy into that. And so I think one of the things that's going to be interesting is to see how Resolve plays into that as a DIT tool now. And then also a lot of the companies that initially tackled the DIT issue, were at price points that were fairly high. And I think Resolve is going to make a lot of those companies that had what we'll call more expensive solutions, kind of be a little bit more honest in terms of, you know, where their value equation sits now.
I'm really excited about this release. And I think that this is a perfect place to wrap up. Juan, where can everybody contact you?
I'm available at juansalvo.com. You can see my work there. And also there's a link to my contact info. And you can also find me on Twitter at j_salvo. And I float around on Lyft Gamma Game quite a bit. So you can see me there.
I'm available at jasonmyris.com. I'm also on Twitter at jasonmyris. And I will be on Lyft Gamma Gain as well. We'll be talking about this a lot.
And I'm Josh Petok. You can see me on Twitter at Josh Petok. And I'm also on Lyft Gamma Gain as a moderator with Jason.
Well, so we'll see you guys around, and enjoy Resolve 9.